You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Giants, your daily podcast for the New York Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Ed Valentine, along with co-host Pat Traina. And we are here to break down the latest roster moves by the Giants, to answer your questions via Twitter, which we usually do on Tuesday, but we will do this week because of the schedule change we're doing on Thursday. Patty, how you doing today?
I am, my head's spinning, Ed. A lot of Giant news to discuss, a lot of great Twitter questions that came in, so I'm ready to tackle them head on.
Well, let's get right to it. Let's talk about the roster moves first, Patty. I think 1-6 this year, 4-19 the last 23 games. The Giants, I think, tried to avoid this sort of massive deconstruction, but I think right now at this point they have no choice but to do what they can to try to collect some draft choices, to try to revamp this roster and basically start this thing over again.
Yeah, look, everybody at the start of the summer, they were optimistic that they had the pieces in place. You know, Dave Gettleman, the general manager, spoke about, look, if we were in rebuild, I wouldn't have spent all this money on Nate Solder and all these other players that we acquired. Unfortunately, it hasn't translated into wins. The Giants, which is one win this year, they just unfortunately have looked lost. And Gettleman, is apparently, he's smart enough to know to cut his losses and rather than just wait to the end of the year and end up, sending these guys packing, he's trying to strike while the iron is hot and get guys who are no longer in the team's plans, especially for the long term of the team, and try and get draft picks, which I think is a smart strategy. And we can discuss that, a little later in this segment. But I definitely see what he's trying to do, and I have no problem with it.
I don't have a problem with it either, Patty. And I know that you probably saw it in your Twitter timeline. I've seen it in my Twitter timeline. And there are people who are upset about the idea that the Giants, quote unquote, only got a fifth round draft choice in return for Damon Harrison. And the reality of it is that if you're upset about that, that really means to me that you haven't paid attention to the history of NFL trades. I mean, I know what kind of a player Damon Harrison is, but the reality also is he's a 30-year-old player who's really a one-dimensional run-stuffing player, as wonderful as he is at that particular role. He's a guy with a massive contract. This is the kind of return that you get, and the idea that the Giants got a 4 and a 7 for Eli Apple. The reality is Eli Apple's a guy on a rookie contract. He's a guy who's still 23 years old. Of course a team is going to be willing to give up more for Eli Apple, because if they're able to get Eli Apple to play up to his draft status, they're going to get more out of Eli Apple than you would long-term out of a Damon Harrison. And where the Giants are right now, whatever they got in return for Harrison is probably a good thing, because I think it's clear, that he wasn't in their long-term plans. So you get something is better than getting nothing.
Yeah, I agree. I think, if they had hung on to Damon Harrison, as, many of these fans in my timeline were hoping would be the case, they probably would have ended up releasing him next February anyway, which meant they wouldn't have gotten anything. They wouldn't have had any leverage from these teams, because these teams would have said, look, we can look at the record. We can look at the production. We can look at the snap counts. And it's clear that you guys are looking to move him. And who's going to give up a draft pick at that point? So you look to move these guys now to teams that are, still in their respective division races, and who can maybe benefit benefit from adding these guys to the roster. So they're a little bit more willing to give up draft picks if it means that, you know, they'll bolster an area in which they're deficient. And that's exactly the approach Gettleman is taking with these draft transactions. And then the other thing you have to take into consideration is if you look at what happened in the offseason, the Giants, I think, signed more free agents than they lost, and they weren't in line to get any compensatory picks next year. So by taking the bull by the horns, as it were, they are adding picks to what was initially, I think they had, I want to say either six, I think they had six of their original picks after, you know, before all the trades that they made. And that includes the Ogletree trade and the Jones trade made, you know, this past year. So they had to do that. They now have, I believe, I think it's either 9 or 10 picks that they can use in the 2019 draft. And I don't think they're going to use all those picks. I think they're going to package, you know, maybe one or two up to move up in a draft if the situation presents itself. And I just think it's a strong strategy.
Sure, Patty. This is what you do when you're not a good team. You recognize that your present simply isn't good. You trade whatever assets people will take. You save some money. You stockpile draft choices. I mean, the Giants need a talent overhaul. They need young players with futures. You take those 9 picks that the Giants have, you use them to add, you know, quality players. You use them, as we've seen other teams do, and as you mentioned, to perhaps move up in the draft, you know, to go after a player that you really want. Maybe in the long run, maybe that guy's a quarterback. You know, maybe it's a different position, but you stockpile that draft capital so that you can improve the roster long term. And you know, obviously there's two benefits to that. If you draft well, which we saw Dave Gettleman, you know, I think in the 2018 draft, I don't think anyone can complain really about the quality of the players that Gettleman brought in. If you're able to continue to do that, even, you know, with an even higher volume of picks, that's what sets a foundation for getting this franchise back on the right footing, back on the right path, you know, back to winning on a consistent basis instead of just, you know, once every 5 years.
Exactly. And you know, it's not a knock against Damon Harrison, who I think we can all agree is one of the best run stoppers in the NFL, but you look at the value and you know, I think Harrison was playing less than 50% of the snaps. I don't remember the exact percentages. And he was basically, you know, the Giants turned him into a 2-down player. Meanwhile, they drafted B.J. Hill, who, you know, presumably was the heir to that spot anyway. They're getting R.J. McIntosh ready for, you know, extended action. You know, he's been on the non-football list. The reserve non-football illness list, but he's now in the midst of a 21-day window in which they have an exemption to evaluate him. And, you know, the other thing people have to look at is you've got to look at the future caps. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr.'s cap hit is going to soar up next year. You know, you've got Landon Collins, if he is still here, coming up for a new contract, Sterling Shepard. So you have to look ahead. It's not necessarily always about the current, you know, the present. This is about the future. And, you know, the Giants made these moves and, you know, over with the Eli Apple move, you know, we saw Sam Beal being drafted in the third round of the supplemental draft. And, you know, that was a gimme that he was going to eventually become a starter. You know, it wasn't going to be this year, unfortunately, but that's down the line. So you just could kind of see the handwriting on the wall when it came to these particular moves. And I think there's more handwriting on the wall when it comes to potential other moves that might be made.
I was about to go there, Patty. You know, I think that I did a breakdown on Big Blue View as to what they might be able to do and might not be able to do, you know, between now and the trade deadline, which is next Tuesday. You know, the one thing that's not going to happen, you know, people just need to accept this. The one thing that's not going to happen is Eli Manning is not going to go anywhere.
No, they're not going to trade Eli. Eli has a non-trade clause in his contract. He said yesterday in his radio spot with Mike Francesa that, you know, he can't imagine himself going anywhere. And I think you've written this before. At this point, you know, there's really not a market for Manning. For all that he's accomplished, you know, the league is going more towards the mobile quarterback. So there's really not that big of a market. And that includes Jacksonville, which has, you know, its share of struggles right now with its offensive line. So I think what's going to end up happening with Eli is he will finish out this year as a Giant. And I could see a scenario where after the bye week, we see maybe Kyle Lauletta get into the games more so. I don't think they'll do it, you know, for this weekend, only because, you know, I don't think Pat Shurmur's going to want to create that chitter chatter amongst everything else that's going on with the team right now. I think he's going to want to wait on that and kind of, you know, just sleep on it a little bit. As far as Eli, you know, and his future, you know, I think it's going to be a stretch for him to be back next year. I thought maybe they would let him finish out that contract. I think, you know, it might make sense to let him finish out that contract, especially if they bring in a young kid in the draft. But I just don't know if they're going to want to take that cap hit.
I don't know either, Patty, but I do think, you know, the other thing people need to consider when it comes to Eli and the situation right now is the Giants are in a short week. You know, they just played Monday night. It's a quick turnaround. It's kind of a difficult time to switch quarterbacks, to, you know, to go to a kid who hasn't even dressed for a game yet. I think that when it comes to Kyle Lauletta, I think we'll see him eventually. Whether we see him as a starter, whether we see him dress and play some snaps in, you know, when the situation allows it, you know, we'll see, but I think that's coming. I think that people just, you know, I know there's panic in the fan base over the way that it went last year with Davis Webb, but I've said this before, it's different people making the decisions. Just relax. You let it play out. You've got 9 games left, and you know, we'll see where it goes. But just because different decision makers made a different decision last year doesn't mean that it's going to happen that way again this year. Patty, quickly, the only other thing that I think we really need to talk about is if anybody else gets moved between now and the deadline on Tuesday, I would think the odds-on favorite to get moved has to be Janoris Jenkins, because when I look at this roster, he's another one of those guys. He's one of the 3 players that was suspended out of the secondary last year. He's the only one of those guys who remains. I firmly do not believe he's in the Giants' long-term plans. He really hasn't played well in 2 years now. And I think that if they can get anything for Jackrabbit, I think he's probably the odds-on favorite to be the next one out the door.
I agree with you 100%. You know, he's – I looked at the stats this morning, and, you know, we talk about production not matching the contract. And Jenkins has given up, I think, 6 touchdowns according to Pro Football Focus. He has the highest NFL rating of the Giants' defensive secondary. And he also probably has, if I'm not mistaken, the highest contract. And I just think that if the Giants get an opportunity to move him, I could see it happening. I mean, he's a guy that, regardless, I don't think he was in the long-term plans beyond this year anyway. So if you can get a draft pick, even if you get an extra 7th, take it.
Sure, Patty. Let's take our first break for a word from our sponsors. We'll come back, and we will spend our last 2 segments getting to your Twitter questions. Giants fans, we all love a night out, whether that's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite sports team. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to.
Sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event.
Okay, Giants fans, Ed Valentine and Patricia Traina back here on Locked On Giants. And we are doing a Twitter Thursday segment this week. Obviously, with the short week, with the Giants having played on Monday, our usual schedule would usually do Twitter Tuesday. This week, we're going to do Twitter Thursday. Patty, as usual, our listeners have come through with quite a good list of questions. We're going to do our best in two segments here to get to as many as we can. I apologize in advance. We're probably not going to get to all of the questions, but we will get to as many as we can.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. John S. wants to know, how would you grade Thomas McGahee's work so far as special teams coordinator, and can he be the right guy? The Giants still don't seem to consider special teams to be a priority.
Oh, I disagree about that. I mean, I think they realize that special teams are one third of the game. So I don't know that I would say that they think it's not a priority. As far as grading the work done by Thomas McGahee, I haven't really thought about it. I'd have to give him an incomplete because, you know, to be fair, he's had returners who, you know, have had injuries. He's had to shuffle some of the personnel he's had. And, you know, I know what the numbers say. I know what the results say. But, you know, I just don't know that we can put a grade on him yet. I'd like to see him, you know, now that it looks like they've settled on Gunners, who can get the job done, that now that they have Quadri Henderson in there, who showed some promise as a punt returner. I just would like to see how this plays out over the next couple of weeks. I was encouraged by what I saw last week. I thought they had, you know, turned the corner a little bit, and let's just see if that continues.
Look, Patty, when it comes to Thomas McGahee, let's also remember that Thomas McGahee has been battling an illness and probably hasn't been in the facility. You know, he is now, but there was a period of time, you know, when he probably wasn't as involved as he would have liked to have been. That is why former special teams coordinator Tom Quinn, who is a friend of McGahee's and has worked with McGahee previously, you know, is back with the Giants as an assistant. So let's just keep that in mind, you know, with McGahee, that he's had his own personal battle to deal with over the last few months. The other thing is, look, when it comes to special teams is really about the people that you have. Do you have a good place kicker? Do you have a good punter? Do you have good returners? And right now the Giants have been struggling to find that returner. Hopefully they have finally found it in Quadri Henderson. I think you and I are both optimistic about that young man. So, and I'm also with you. I'm going to disagree with the idea that they haven't made special teams a priority. I mean, you look at a lot of the players they did bring in, Michael Thomas, Cody Latimer, Russell Shepard. All of these guys have been quality, you know, top-tier special teams players in the league, you know, for a while now. The one piece that's been missing in the Giants' special teams has been a consistent quality returner, And hopefully Quadri Henderson can give them that.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, there were signs of special teams playing better last, you know, or Monday, I should say. So I think it's too soon to give McGahee a grade, given, you know, the constant, you know, changes that he's had to deal with. And like you said, the fact that he's been battling some health issues. And, you know, I think the time to grade him and the rest of the coaches will be, you know, as we get closer to the end of the season. You know, until then, let's just see if they can stabilize what basically is turned into a sinking ship.
All right, Patty, our next question comes, I think, from a couple of your favorites. This one comes from Steve and Gina. And Steve and Gina want to know, what happened to Nate Solder on Monday night? Is he playing injured? It looked like he had a bunch of apparatus on his arms, but he was beaten too many times. And they also say, you know, they know he's not expected to be an A-plus player, you know, but he didn't even look like the B kind of player that they hoped he would be.
Hey, Steve and Gina, thanks for the question. Yeah, they write in every week. God bless them. Regarding Nate Solder, he's had that apparatus on his elbow now going back to training camp. So that's not something that's new. And Solder, and I think we also got another question about this. I think Solder after the game made a comment that something to the effect of, I didn't prepare as well or whatnot. I think you have to kind of remember, and this isn't an excuse, I'm not making an excuse for him, but Solder was on the injury report last week. And he also, if I remember correctly, didn't practice a couple of days, might have been limited one day and didn't practice another. So how much he was able to actually get done on the field, which, again, it was a kind of a weird work week, that remains to be seen. I mean, as far as what he was able to get done. So I think that's what he probably meant. It is not an excuse. I'm not making an excuse for him. I'm just trying to, you know, get inside his mind and figure out what those comments meant. Now, with that said, Nate Solder is not a rookie. He has done this before. At this point, you know, preparation, yes, he has to prepare every week, but he should be able to go out there and deliver the goods. And he did not do that the other night. He did look like he was all over the map. So it was disappointing. I don't know if it's because of the injury. I don't know if it's a combination of the injury and the fact that maybe he didn't get the practice reps in that he was looking to get in or feels he needs. It could be any number of those circumstances. So, but yes, I do agree that Solder was part of the problem last week.
Yes, he was, Patty. You know, the thing about it is that, look, I think Steve and Gina are absolutely right here, and we've said this before. Nate Solder is not what you would call an A-plus player. He's not, you know, a guy who is a top three or four offensive tackle in the league. He's a good player overall. He's a guy that can be, in my view, you know, part of the solution on this offensive line long term. Is he going to be a perfect player? Is he going to be an absolute lockdown guy at left tackle? No, he's never been that guy. He's a good, you know, he's a good player, a good teammate, a good guy in the locker room. But the Giants, and people will say, but what about that contract? Well, my answer to the contract, my answer to that is, would you still like to see Eric Flowers playing left tackle? because if they didn't sign Nate Solder to that contract, he was the only choice they had in the market, really, because there wasn't a starting caliber left tackle in the draft. If you don't sign Nate Solder to that contract, you still have Eric Flowers playing left tackle. So just remember that when you go to rip Solder.
Yeah, very true.
All right, Patty, our next question, we'll take one more, and this one is from Blaze4551. We'll take one more. I'm sorry, we're actually going to take, this one is from PJ Rich, and it'll be our last question before we take our first break. And this one is simply, should the Giants sit Saquon Barkley the rest of the season so they don't waste his legs?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I get where you're going with the thought process, but, you know, I wouldn't sit him. I would continue to get him work, but I wouldn't overwork him. In other words, if they were still in the race, I would say, okay, maybe you give him 80 to 85 to 90% of the snaps. Maybe you cut those back a little bit, especially if, as Shurmur said the other day about wanting to see some of the younger guys they have, you know, getting them involved. And by the way, I wouldn't be surprised now that the Giants have a couple roster spots open. I wouldn't be stunned if maybe they bring up one of the running backs they have on the practice squad to the 53-man roster to start getting a look at these guys. But I just don't think you basically say to Barkley, okay, you know what? We're out of it. We're going to put you on the shelf. We'll see you next year.
No, you can't do that, Patty. You know, the fact of the matter is people pay money to come to the games. Part of the money, they pay money to come and see Saquon Barkley. They pay money to come and see Odell Beckham. You know, they pay money to see the Giants football team. You can't do that to your fan base, and you can't do that to the players in the locker room either. You know, if you're not going to put your best players out there on the field, then, you know, then what sort of a message does that send to the locker room? I just, you know, I get the idea that, you know, you don't want the guy to get hurt. You don't want anybody to get hurt. And I get, you know, I know how important Barkley is to the Giants' future and Odell is to the Giants' future and all of the, you know, the younger guys. But you can't just say, well, you know, we're just not going to play so-and-so for the rest of the year. I don't see how you can do that at all. Anyway,
no, you can't. You really can't. I mean, Barkley is one of those young players, and even though you know what you have in him, you know, there's still room for him to grow, and he'll be the first one to tell you that. You know, he mentioned, you know, I could get better at pass protection. I can get better at running my routes. I can get better at, you know, being patient. He rattled off a whole bunch of things that he wants to improve upon. So why would you want to take that away from him?
Patty, let's take another break here for a word from our sponsors. Then we will come back and we will take a few more questions before we wrap up today's show. Okay, Giants fans, Ed Valentine and Patricia Traina here on Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And we are taking your Twitter questions on this Thursday. Our usual Twitter Tuesday segment moved back a couple of days thanks to the Giants having played on Monday night. So let's get to three or four more questions here. Let's see what we've got. Let's see. Bob wants to know... let's see. I'm sorry. I lost my place here, Patty.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my goodness. I lost my place. So our next question comes from that's_so_rabin6. And he wants basically to know, and this is, there are two or three questions about this. What do we really think of Pat Shurmur's play calling, the two-point conversion, the use of Saquon Barkley, you know, and all of that. So basically, we've got a couple of questions about the play calling at this point. So let's talk about that.
Well, I think first and foremost, you look at the play calling and the results and you say, you know, yick, it hasn't been there. But what I would say when in judging the play calling, does Pat Shurmur have everything he needs in order to call what he wants? And by that, I mean, look at the offensive line and the inconsistency of that unit. It all starts up front with that offensive line. And if you can't block for the run, if you can't block and protect your quarterback, how are you supposed to do anything? You know, people are quick to blame Eli Manning. They're quick to blame, you know, the drop passes. They're quick to blame the running backs or whoever. And I'm not saying they are not part of the problem, but it all starts up front. And, you know, let's, you know, if there's anybody out there who doesn't think that offensive line is a problem, please write in, because I'd like to hear your logic behind that.
One of the things that I've said several times, Patty, you know, especially this week, is when people complain about Pat Shurmur's play calling, is put yourself in Shurmur's shoes. You're sitting over there needing to call a play, and you look down at your play card, and your first question is, can we block that? Can we block that? Can we block that? I'm not sure we can block that either. I don't think we can block this, but I'm running out of time. I got to call a play, so let's just try this one. You know, that's the kind of thing that the man has to be going through right now. He understands that the offensive line isn't good enough at this point. So, you know, you look down there and what do you have on your play card that you can actually block? You know, I wanted to kill Shurmur the other night when on the third and two play, when the Giants threw the swing pass to Saquon Barkley that wound up losing 8 yards. And I was like, why on earth would they do that? And then you watch the film and you look at how that play was supposed to unfold. One of the best things the Giants can do is get Saquon Barkley in space with a one-on-one matchup. That particular play was designed to do exactly that, because you swing the ball out to Barkley. The way the play is drawn up, he's got a one-on-one matchup. He's going to win that one-on-one matchup 95 out of 100 times and get you your 2 yards and maybe get you a whole lot more. Except that play gets blown up because Spencer Pulley misses a block, Chad Wheeler misses a block, and instead of one-on-one, Saquon Barkley's looking at 3-on-1, 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and no chance.
Very good point. And you're right. I think I dissected that play for The Athletic as well. And I circled how one of the Giant blockers was flat on his back on that play. So, you know, it just reinforces what I said. You can point to Eli Manning as the problem. And again, he does need to play better. I'm not disputing that. But the offensive line's inconsistency has been perhaps the number one problem on this team for not just this year, but in years past.
Oh, I hear you, Patty. You know, we've been preaching to the choir on that one for quite a while. Let's take one final question. This one comes from Michael Nixon, and I think it actually is a really good way to wrap up our show, you know, as we look at the situation that the Giants are in, the fact that they've been, you know, more bad than good, you know, for half a decade or more now. And Michael wants to know, he says, I believe the ultimate culprit here is John Mara and Steve Tisch. They allowed this to happen. Do you agree? Go ahead, Patty.
I always say you win as a team and you lose as a team. And ownership is very much a part of the team. So can you excuse them from the mess that has been made? No, you can't. Now, with that said, John Mara and Steve Tisch are also hands-off owners in that they hire people to do a job and they don't necessarily interfere or intervene unless it is absolutely necessary. I think we've seen, you know, a very few occasions over the years where they have intervened on anything. And that's just, you know, basically their management style, whether you agree with that or you don't agree with it. I mean, I know I don't like to be micromanaged, but, you know, there are people there that like that and who say that, you know, in certain cases you should be micromanaged. I do believe that the Maras and the Tishes let Jerry Reese hang around a little too long in hopes that he would fix the mess that he created. I'm not sure what they saw to make them think that Jerry Reese would change how he went about building rosters. So to that degree, I do say that falls on ownership. I know people are saying, well, you know, the Maras are being loyal to Eli Manning. There's no way they're going to throw him out the door. I think ideally they don't want to, but I also believe that they're going to leave that in Dave Gettleman's hands to make that decision. So again, to recap, Michael, you win as a team, you lose as a team. ownership is included in that. And have they made mistakes? Yes. I don't think they should have tossed Tom Coughlin out and not, you know, tossed Jerry Reese out right behind him. But, you know, you can't go back and undo the past, unfortunately.
Oh, Patty, you're being far too nice here to the Maras and the Tishes. I'm sorry.
I'm trying to be fair.
You're being far too nice. The reality, the way I see it, the reality of it is that the major decisions that we've talked about, you know, many, many times, it's not all ownership's fault, but for my money, this thing really fell apart, you know, when the Giants, and it's not the decision to move on from Tom Coughlin. You know, I do think that maybe Tom Coughlin's time had run its course, but the crux of this comes down to keeping Jerry Reese too long, choosing the wrong coach to succeed Tom Coughlin, you know, and going from there. And those are ownership choices. You know, has Dave Gettleman been perfect? No. Has Pat Shurmur been perfect? No. Was Tom Coughlin perfect? Absolutely not. But those major decisions are ownership level decisions, and those are the ones that really, you know, set the wheels in motion, you know, basically set the wheels going in reverse. So I absolutely feel like, you know, like this falls at the feet of ownership. And now we just have to hope that they've put the right people in place. You know, I still have faith at this point in Dave Gettleman. I don't know, you know, whether Pat Shurmur's the answer as head coach or not. You know, we'll have to see. I'm not ready to give up on Shurmur. I know some people are, but I think you have to give these guys some time. You know, but I absolutely think that you have to point the finger at some of those major decisions that were made as far as you know, the GM and the head coach, and those come back to ownership.
I agree with you, Ed, and I made that point. I said that they kept Jerry Reese too long. I've been screaming about Jerry Reese and the job he's been doing since 2013. I absolutely agree with you. And I started to scream about McAdoo, you know, as early as last year. So, I mean, we agree on this, believe it or not.
Yes, we do, Patty. I guess we came about making the point in different ways, but I do think we ultimately agree on that. All right, Giants fans, with that said, that is our show for Thursday. Please remember to check out my work at Big Blue View. You can also follow me on Twitter at Valentine_Ed. You can follow Patty at Patricia_Traina. Be sure that you do that so you know where all of her great work can be found. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.